Hello, mate. What's up?
Well, look, we're doing this at an unusual time, aren't we?
Well,
Mid-morning Thursday.
Yeah.
And I play squash first thing on Thursday mornings.
Oh, do you now?
And I lose first thing on Thursday mornings. So
yeah.
I'm a bit grumpy, really. Because basically, the guy I play, Steve, friend of the pod, he's 6 years younger than I am.
Yeah.
And as I get older, it's hard to disguise this, to be honest.
So, newsflash, you're feeling grumpy. Wow.
more grumpy than usual. Actually, when I go off to play, I said to Claire, right, I'm going off to play squash. And she says, give him hell. Oh, and give him my love as well.
Such a lovely Christian greeting.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 340 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page, and there's Joe Davis.
Hi, everyone. Great to be back with you again.
Really?
Yeah, of course it is. Always good.
Oh, okay.
Love the 17. You know that. I mean, not so much with you, because you're grumpy. The 17 aren't grumpy. Well, at least not yet, because they haven't listened to this episode.
Well, that's true. That's true. Listen, we ought to do a church notice about future episodes, oughtn't we?
Mm. Yes, we should.
So, start with the notices. I am going on holiday, but not in sort of one block. So we're going to go fortnightly for the remainder of August.
So what you're saying is you're going on two holidays.
Well, I'm going on two separate weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going on two. Well, I'm not like you. I don't go on about 4 3-week holidays every year.
I could say, I'm going on holiday this year. Just the one. It's split into 3 weeks, 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, that's how you roll, isn't it? I've got a week off next week and then a week off at the end of August. So we'll go fortnightly for the rest of August. So there will not be an episode next week, but there will be one after that.
Hmm. Okay.
That's all I've got to say on the subject.
Great. Well, that's fair play.
And let me ask you how you are.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm very well, I think. I went to see Naked Gun.
Okay, is it good?
The one with Liam Neeson. Well, I fear it will be overlooked by the Oscars again. But, I mean, there's lots of good laugh-out-loud gags in it.
Excellent.
Strung together in a fairly painful film, but no, it's great. If you want good fun, go see Naked Gun.
I mean, yeah. I remember the first time I saw the Police Squad,
was
the television
series. That's right,
series.
Yeah.
And I was in a cottage, I think, in Norfolk with friends, and it was very late at night. We just put it on. I'd never heard of it, and clearly it wasn't successful because it was on so late at night. And I thought it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
It's great.
And of course, in those days, you couldn't like go streaming and find it. You know,
no.
It was just a random happenstance that we saw it. So, yeah, when they're good, they're very, very good, that group, that team. But, they're variable.
It's cleverly told because he plays Leslie Nielsen, the original guy's son. So it's fun. It's fun. More than that, just again, enjoying I'm fully nerding out in nature now. I think it's getting more intense the older I get. Flowers at this time of year, just incredible. Went to wildlife and wetlands. Oh, you'd be interested in this. I saw a little egret, no big shakes there. Cattle egrets, because they're nesting there, and a great white egret. So that's all the egrets there.
Ticked off all the egrets.
A little hat trick of egrets, which, if you're me, is lovely. I tell you what I was going to ask you about. Prayer.
Mm.
Prayer. I was thinking about this, watching some just awful pictures on the TV, as so many of us do, from Gaza. And there's boats crossing and the desperation of immigrants. And, you know, just, I don't know. I just found myself retreating to old style prayer. God, sort this mess out.
Mm.
But, you know, as we have said many times, not really believing in a kind of interventionist God. It's not that I think God should sort it out. I think God through us is going to sort it out. And by us, I don't mean you and me. I mean human beings. So I was just thinking about that and pondering it and what we've said before about how I don't want to give up on crying out to God, because prayer does change me, and not just it changes me, I think it somehow connects me. I mean, I guess my theology is everything is connected. Everything is a web of interconnection. Possibly every atom in the universe, as I like to think. So I do that. But it's just interesting that when you feel desperate and powerless to change something, how the old style sort of creeps up. And if I think about it, I go and light a candle or, you know, take a mindful moment to be with them. But my instant reaction is, God, sort this out now, please. I'm begging you. It's just fascinating that that is still within me after all this sort of altered theology and change of state. I've just been noticing that in the face of desperation, that's what comes up.
Well, I mean, there's a few things here, I think. Firstly, I always think the how are yous are a nice lighthearted
way to open
the show.
Yeah, I know, but
you know, thank you for plunging us straight into existential prayer questions. No, it's all good. It's all good. You know, I've got to think what to say. That's all. Listen, I think you just tap into something very fundamental that prayer is, which is at its one of its most basic forms is a cry from the heart.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're moved by compassion, when you're moved by what seems an insoluble injustice and problem, you're going to cry out to God. Of course, that's perfectly reasonable. Maybe you should be listening to this, if this is something that's happening to you more and more, that you are called to pray more.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, you know, maybe there is a call here that you actually need to rediscover rituals, ways of praying that are really going to help you.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, heaven knows we all pray a lot about you.
You and so many.
You're a lovely guy, but you're so messed up.
Well, really. that phrase has come back to me this week.
It often
haunts me. Yeah, over this very matter. You know, Joe, lovely guy, but so messed up. Doesn't know what prayer's all about at all. And happily so, I might add, but yeah.
But maybe that's a good prayer for us to pray ourselves, you know, like, Lord, I try and be a lovely guy, but I'm so messed up. I mean, that's quite a good prayer in and of itself, isn't it?
Really? Okay.
But I think it's just that you're responding to a heart call.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Look, I'm going to finish on a positive note here. Okay. A quick theme update. My theme for the year is fear not.
Yeah.
I've just been through a very quiet and rather troubling patch work-wise. And last year, I think I would have been far more fretful, far more fearful, far more anxious about the finance and everything. And Rachel agrees I've done much better this year.
Excellent.
And I think that has genuinely been with a bit of help from friends, from being a bit more determined to focus on fear and the causes of it and what to do and what not to do. Reading Sumo Guy's book has helped. Many thanks, Paul. Lots of progress, I feel. It's never as... transformation is never as fast as you want. But I feel it's going in the right direction. So I was a little bit encouraged with that. Yeah, that's me. How about you, my friend? How are you?
Well, I mean, while we're on that, I'd just like to say thank you to everybody who gives to the podcast.
Oh, golly,
I think let's bring it up front. We normally say it at the end, but let's bring it up front. Because... we are both freelance to some extent, to different extents. We're reliant on freelance income. And the podcast is one of the jobs, in a sense, we do. So if you feel you'd like to contribute, you can do so from the website. I have to say, we are looking at other ways of giving as well. We'll update you on those in the future. But if you can give us a price of a cup of coffee every month or something like that, that's fantastic.
It genuinely is. Thank you so much to all those who do that. And those who give more than a price of cup. Cup of coffee, some of you. God bless you. Thank you so much. Genuinely is helpful. And listen, if you haven't got a PayPal account, you'd rather take out a standing order or something, just email joe@midfaithcrisis.org and I will furnish you with the bank details of Mr. and Mrs. Davis.
So, yeah, I don't normally say this, and in fact, I hate myself for saying it. I'm going to have a shower now for asking for money. But, you know... we are very, very grateful.
He's all flushed and red and sweaty, listeners.
Yeah, now I hate it. Oh, look.
It's all squirmy. It's
anyway, let's talk about something else. How am I?
Yes.
I'm good, thank you. Very good, yes. My middle daughter, Madeline, passed her driving test, which is a wonderful thing.
Madeline. So
that's,
great stuff.
That's absolutely lovely. Good. As I said, I'm going on holiday next week.
Yeah.
Which will be nice. Going down to Kent, see some relatives. I think we're staying virtually next door to a vineyard, so...
Oh, happy day.
You know, I don't know why that's making me happy, but it is. The cricket was pretty marvellous earlier this week.
Incredible, wasn't it? Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? People don't really understand Test cricket. You either get it or you don't. But if you do, it just is the most amazing narrative.
Well, I've got to say, it's only come to me recently. I used to find it the most boring sport on TV. But I do think we have to give a certain amount of credit to the England team for playing a lot more interesting cricket nowadays.
That's true. I think the thing is, I often say this about sport when we talk about it on the podcast. It's not really about the sport. It's about the story. That's the thing. All sport is narrative and humans love stories.
Yeah.
And that's why we talk about it. And so hopefully, if you don't like cricket, there's not much I can do for you, really. You're probably not in the will of God, but, you know, what can I say?
Of course not.
And I got some new cocktail glasses. Now, this is interesting.
Yeah.
I'm using the term interesting loosely here.
Okay. But
they're called Nick and Nora glasses. Do you know this?
No.
This is absolutely true. Nick and Nora cocktail glasses. And they're like a sort of coupe, but they're more high-sided. They're cross almost between a wine glass and a coupe. And the idea is they're you don't spill them so much. Yeah, I'll put a link in.
Thank you.
That's not the shape.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you for doing that gesture.
Yeah, because I think that will help all the listeners.
Yeah, that's good. They get their name from a film, a series of films called the Thin Man films, based on books by Dashiell Hammett, written, done in the 40s or 30s, which the leading characters are Nick and Nora, and they're two detectives, and they're basically drunk most of the time on cocktails,
okay.
But they use these glasses. And it makes me very happy.
Well,
the glasses
good.
Make me very happy.
Well, and it makes me happy that you've delved into the history of glasses. Of course you have.
I do like a story again. Anyway, that's enough of us. Let's get on to some feedback. We've got loads of feedback this week, which is lovely.
Well, it's great. Thank you. And some we've held on to for a bit. So let's get cracking. Okay, so Phil said, just to let you know that as a response to the encouragement I have felt from Midfaith Crisis, I've now started a conversation space in South Oxfordshire where we are seeking to ask, express, discuss those challenging aspects of faith in the safest possible way. To my surprise and delight, 9 folk, he says, a trinity of trinities, met for the inaugural meeting of Questioning Faith Matters. And we agreed to meet fortnightly and compiled a list of possible subjects, which we will now work through, no doubt unsystematically and randomly. He said, my reason for writing is simply to thank you for helping me through a challenging few years and helping me find the courage to do something locally to help and encourage others on similar faith journeys. And that's from dear Phil.
Thank you so much, Phil.
That's encouraging.
It's lovely. I feel this is something we should do a bit more with.
Yeah.
You know, we get asked over the years, you know, how do you set up a group or is there a group? Is there a group I could go to? We've never sort of wanted to coordinate that on the grounds of...
we couldn't.
Well, inadequacy. Yeah. Basically ineptitude. But also because there's all kinds of complications if you start recommending groups. But I would love to hear from you if you're part of a Midfaith Crisis group or a similar group.
Yeah, indeed.
If you could get in touch, we could put stuff on the website that would be advice for others.
Mm.
You know, if you are willing to sort of let people know where you are, maybe we could find a way to facilitate that. I hesitate to use the phrase best practice in relation to anything on this podcast.
Wisely so.
But if we could get some adequate practice together, that would be great. You know,
yeah.
It'd be good to get something on the website about it. So do get in touch. If you're part of a group, and however many that is, get in touch with us and we'll maybe collate some material, put some...
Yeah.
I think we did do some guides. I think you wrote some guides originally, didn't you?
Yeah, I've done some stuff.
Okay, I'll try and dig that out and make that better.
Also, if you're in the Worthing area and you fancy meeting up monthly at 9:15 on a Sunday morning, get in touch as well. You'd be very welcome. We do one here.
Well, there you are.
Okay, Terry wrote in and said, hi, I've just listened to episode 330, Growing Old Disgracefully. And he says, I'm in my late 70s and I really struggled to accept this age. I was introduced to my local area of the charity Mind. I joined and became a volunteer. I run sessions showing lectures, aiding the recovery of those experiencing depression, anxiety, self-worth, etc. Suddenly, I'm realizing I have the ability to help those within the group. God is using me to extend his healing power through me. God can and does use us regardless of age. Adults of God. Brilliant. Your podcast has only today been open to me. Thanks. That's from Terry. Well, perhaps I don't know whether Terry still listens. I mean, one podcast is enough for many people. But thanks, Terry. That was really great. I mean,
yeah.
Abraham and all that stuff. Yeah, you're just getting to your...
Oh, yeah. Moses was 80 when he was called, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, exactly. In the prime of life.
Well, I think this is obviously something I've been thinking about. And, right. You know... I mean, never mind you're struggling to accept your age. You tried playing squash, Terry. That really brings it home, your mortality. Anyway, I have been thinking a lot about this, and I'll put some recommended books or books that I found helpful.
Yeah.
Up. I'll put a link in the show notes. I'll put them on my blog. There's a book called Transitions by William Bridges, which is very, very good. I read a book called The Changing Mind, which is, it's there's a lot in it, but it's got some really good things in.
Yeah.
There's another book I read some time ago called The 100-Year Life,
I think it is.
Because it's basically arguing that we're all going to live longer. So the old tripartite model of, you know, education, work, retirement, don't really work when you might have at least sort of 40 years of retirement. A lot more of us are going to live into our 90s. So what do you do?
Yeah.
And the fundamental rule I think that a lot of these come up with is keep active. Don't retire. Do stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that you're sharing your wisdom, Terry. I think that's great. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Love it.
Really encouraging. Great stuff, Terry. And Lorna wrote in. Now, here's an interesting one. She says, hi, Joe. I was wondering if you could discuss with Nick what terms of reference the 17 might give themselves now. Many of us would not call ourselves conservative, evangelical, or even charismatic anymore. So what do we call ourselves? Progressive? Liberal? Emerged? These new labels feel like they come with a lot of baggage and misrepresentation too. And for those of us who have not fully left with one camp and not quite entered the other camp yet, are we the liminal Christians? I learnt that word this week from Brian McLaren's book. He says, I know it's not necessary to stick a label on everything, but it does help with a sense of belonging and the ability to identify those who are like-minded in their thinking, theology and spiritual journey. Thanks, Lorna. Yeah, labels, eh?
Well, this is one we come back to quite a lot, isn't
it?
I like to call myself a redeemed, elected, Christian, truth-using man. but sadly, that spells rectum. So maybe not the best... not the best acronym. I don't know. We talk about this a lot, don't we? You know, Christian, the use of the word Christian, and do we still call ourselves Christians?
Yeah.
I suppose I would say that any category gets defiled, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it gets defiled very quickly by people's behaviour.
I agree. And somehow progressive feels a bit like liberal elite, doesn't it? It feels a bit superior and a bit... I don't like it.
Well, names get weaponized, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I know. I mean, I as much as possible, I just say to me, I'm trying to follow the way of Jesus.
Mm.
But I don't really think that's any better. That can sound superior. I mean, you know, what works? I don't know is the answer, Lorna.
Well, I think rebranding never really fixes or rarely fixes a problem. If you've got a problem as a company or a product, rebranding actually doesn't really help. You know, the problem is the product, not the brand name. Therefore, I don't feel that I want to give up. And I feel, why should I? You know, why should I give up on the word Christian just because other people abuse it and misuse it?
Yeah.
Why am I the one who has to do the explanation and pay the price on that? And I'm not saying I'm a shining example of it all the time either.
No.
Personally, I still call myself a Christian. I don't use any of those other labels anymore. I was asked the other day, you know, are you a post-evangelical, by someone who was slightly suspicious of me, I think. And I don't want to play that game. I don't know, you know, what, you know, evangelical is such a big and broad and uncertain term. I think don't I like to keep it simple. As I say, I'm a Christian, and I don't like to get pulled into any of the other games, really, in terms of what hype that is.
Okay, well, that's probably good advice. Let's go with that then.
I remain a redeemed, elected, Christian, truth-using man. That's what I am.
Thank you.
Ethel would be proud.
Right, well, Jeff wrote in, and he says, "Pith, child sponsorship opinions." And he says, okay, maybe that was a bit too pithy. He said, we had a visiting speaker at church yesterday from a child sponsorship charity. Publications such as New Internationalists are very sceptical and cynical. Do you have any thoughts? No. No, a pithy answer. Well, I do, other than, I think this, when it comes to charities and charities with dodgy reputations, I think I have to separate out what's my responsibility from what is the charity's responsibility. And there is no doubt that sometimes you give to charity, especially charities working in difficult situations around the world, and sometimes the money gets a little bit abused and not used the way you would have expected, or perhaps you given into the wrong hands. And I think, well, my responsibility was I was responding to a crisis, to something that I felt needed help. I couldn't help. I thought this charity could help. And so I've given to that charity. And that is my responsibility. I can't be held responsible for what the charity then did. I just did my best in terms of researching a charity I thought would do well and help the people I wanted to help. So I, in answer to your question, Jeff, child sponsorship opinions, find a good one.
Yeah.
And give, that's a good thing to do, I think. I haven't heard all the critiques of it all. I can imagine what they are. But if that's something you're passionate about, I wouldn't stop doing it.
Well, I think as someone who works part of my time with a charity, and I've worked with charities all my working life, really, I've set them up and I've done, it's the charitable help is complicated. It is complicated. Motives are mixed, and you have to accept some fuzziness, I think, there. Similarly, what encourages us to give, what we respond to, is mixed. Part of the reason that child sponsorship is so powerful is because people want a connection. They want a connection with a real person. They want to know they're making a difference to a real person's life. And I understand that there's a lot of baggage that can come with that. I would say, do your research, look at annual reports, talk to other people. But most of all, find something, a cause that gives you joy in your giving.
Okay.
Find something that gives you some joy to give to. And I think if you really have joy about it and it really touches you, you will accept that sometimes, charities are, particularly sort of international charities, they're big, they're full of people who may not, behave, you just don't know. But I think, what's the end goal? Can you be confident that the end goal is largely being reached and your money is being used pretty well, being stewarded well?
Exactly.
Anyway,
well, that's the best we got. Stuart wrote in and says, "Hi, Joe, pithy question alert."
People have been pithy this week. I love it.
Oh, me too.
So much pith.
Best, isn't it? He says, "You both seem comfortable with the idea of some kind of end-of-life judgment in the pod last week." He says, "I thought we'd sacked that off. We are all family and all loved." Yes, I thought we were all loved and in, and being a Christian is to live in the knowledge of this. Are we judged on the basis of actions that are likely repercussions or expressions of our past? All behaviour is communication, yes? So what is this judgment? Yours faithfully and slightly nervous, Stu.
Oh, well, I'm sorry, Stu, you're not in the elect. I am a redeemed, elected, Christian, truth-using man, as we know. So you're out,
you
mate.
You very much are.
I've changed in the space of a week.
Well, I think I feel less strongly on this one than you do. So I think a lot of what was said about judgment in the Bible is not really, I think it's picture language. I don't think it's meant to be taken too literally. But I do understand the very human need to know that justice gets done in the end. And the people who have done murderous and truly awful things sort of get their comeuppance. I understand that, but I don't know that I believe it in the literal way that many Christians would believe that now. Over to you.
Well, I don't think you can simply ignore the language of judgment that is in the scriptures and Jesus talks about returning to judge. So I don't think you can just sort of say, well, that's not going to happen. I think it is all about what do you understand by judgment, really. Do you really want? And again, a certain amount of this is just projecting on much of what we think about the afterlife is to a certain extent sort of projecting what we think it should be. We don't know, but I think that there needs to be some kind of justice, and God is the God of justice. Now, is it justice that people should never come face to face with who they are and what they've done? I don't think that's doing justice to them or to their actions in that sense. I don't believe in hellfire and damnation and eternal punishment and all that kind of stuff. I don't believe in that kind of judgment where you stream up and Jesus gives you a thumbs up, thumbs down, and you go off to eternity.
Yeah.
I'm a universalist, so I believe in the end everyone will be saved. But I think the process of saving, the process of redemption, has to, just as it does on earth, it has to involve some kind of encounter with Jesus and some kind of recognition of who we truly are and what we've been like, what our shadow side was like, what our actions were like.
That's
what I think about judgment, you know.
And when you throw out that phrase, you can't ignore Jesus said he'd come back and judge. Well, I mean, I'm afraid I think, well, he's already doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, the Christ is in me. I mean, what is sober judgment all about? Isn't it getting in touch with the deepest part of yourself and having that ability to look and see yourself clearly? And I think when you do that, you see what's beloved and wonderful, but you also see the mess you make of things. And perhaps what that judgment looks like is not, as you're saying, you know, not beating yourself up, but going, no, this isn't living in harmony with who God is and who you truly are. So the judgment is already happening in that sense, rather than a day of judgment at the end, which I think is picture language. How would you say?
Yes,
that?
I mean, it comes as apocalyptic, I think. It's a whole kind of language of talk, a way of talking, a sort of series of metaphors. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah.
I like that. I think the other thing is there's a difference between judgment and punishment.
Yes, absolutely.
So I think we have to detach the two.
Yeah, well said.
You can have judgment in the sense of wanting people to repent, you know, wanting people to look at themselves, to turn around, to face in a different direction. But you don't have to accompany that with punishment. In a sense, you might say that the encounter with the truth about ourselves is punishment enough. You know, that is hard work on any, whether it happens in this life or beyond. So, yeah.
I mean, I for example, I think about those rioters who were, trying to set fire to hotels where asylum seekers were being temporarily settled. I wonder how it would be for them when the day comes when they realise, gosh, those people are, we are connected. They're my brothers and sisters. You don't need the threat of hell, do you, in those, when that day comes, to realise, oh, gosh, I was hurting a part of me when I hurt them. I was they're damaging them and myself. This isn't how it should be. So that would be, what judgment would look like, I would think.
And on a very basic level, we say in this podcast, we believe fundamentally, well, I believe fundamentally, God is love and God is just.
Yeah.
So those two have to come together.
Yeah.
So I believe there has to be some kind of encounter. You know, apart from anything else, surely there has to be some kind of chance to encounter Christ as he is, God as the divine truly is.
Yeah.
See them clearly and respond to that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's very unfair, that's what I mean. I don't mean judgment in the classic sort of Jesus as a judge sitting with a gavel and declaring people guilty, not guilty.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about
it. Okay. Well, it's good to go there. Who knows? People may write in with their own thoughts. Josh wrote in and said, "Dear Joe and Nick, love the podcast, blah, blah. Non-violence is something I've been reflecting on a lot recently. Like you, I wholeheartedly believe that Jesus lived and taught a radical message of non-violence. And as such, we should also pursue this. In the past few years, I've been working with a Ukrainian young person. I'm a youth worker. He says, and something that stuck with me is this young person telling me that before they fled at the start of the war, they were being taught how to make Molotov cocktails. Later, they told me how their dad was handed a gun and is now defending their hometown. He says, I tried to make this pithy. I do wonder if my belief in non-violence is so much easier to hold on to from a place of privilege. I've never really experienced violence against me, especially not physical violence. I often wonder how I would respond if I was in the position of this young person's dad. He said, just my ponderings. All the best, Josh. Thank you, Josh. That's a really good point. And good to note, we live in a very different context. If I saw people threatening my family with violence or death, you know, I may well have a different theology. All I'll say on that is pondering non-violence and practicing it prepares me, I think, for that occasion. A bit like, you know, in Lenten practices, at Lent we give up stuff because it helps us to battle. You know, the idea is it helps us to battle sin. If we can handle small temptations like a bit of chocolate, it sort of encourages those muscles to expand for when we face the big temptations of life. And I think there's that makes logical sense to me, actually.
Yeah.
That actually it's good to deny yourself from time to time because it makes you a more self-disciplined person. So I think similarly to non-violence, I think if I can learn to deal with the violence that's in my own heart, even though I'm not living in a particularly violent context, but if I can notice those things, hopefully, if and when that does happen to me, I will respond at least in the way that is the most Christ-like way to respond at that time. What do you think?
Non-violence is different to pacifism. That's what I would think. I think a non-violent response is a personal response, largely, to injury or to oppression, to how you're going to act. And it's actually a response that takes back agency. In the way that Jesus describes it, for example, the actions that he describes in Matthew, turning the other cheek, going the extra mile, giving more than is demanded, part of what that does is it gives you back agency. It says, you think you're taking this from me, I'm going to give you this. So it's very much a personal response. I am not a pacifist, and therefore I think there is a time when you have to fight.
You have to do the least bad thing.
Yeah. Exactly. But that's a personal stance. I'm not judging anybody who is a pacifist, but I'm not a pacifist. I thought about it lots when I was sort of first researching Jesus's attitude to nonviolence. And so I think that's the difference. I think Josh's point is great in the sense that, yes, let's never sort of just glibly accept this stuff from a point of privilege, knowing that we'll never have to put it into practice, or we won't really.
Well, we hope not.
We hope not. Certainly we hope not. I think it's good to learn, though, and to look at the lives of people who do it and see how do they respond.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you. Peter wrote in and he said he was talking about the Richard Rohr quote we used last week about how if we, you know, do not transform our pain, we will surely transmit it. But he asks this, you know, how do we transform it? He says, I wonder if you might push it a bit further on this. How do we as individuals transform our own individual pain and loss and grief? And perhaps how might the church play a role in that? Yeah. Well, good question, Peter. Thank you. And it was a great and long email. Thank you, Peter.
That is a fundamental question, isn't it? You know, that is lifelong learning there. That's the work that we're called to do, is to transform our experiences, our joys and our pains.
Yeah.
There's a few things I would say straight away. One is you have to give all these things time.
Yes. Yeah.
There's no immediate response.
And no quick fix.
There is no quick fix. You started this show by talking about, you know, your do not fear thing. That's a slow process, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's a very, you're inching forward.
It takes,
I know,
practice.
From my own battles. Yeah. My own anxieties, I get so frustrated because they don't seem to be fixing very quickly. But you just have to give it time. I think the other things are find people to journey with you, friends, really. This is where church comes in, because I don't think the church as an institution is equipped necessarily to deliver miracle cures. It sometimes acts as though it is, But it isn't, you know, this is one of the problems with the way that a lot of church does. It sort of issues a prayer from the front and thinks that all your problems are fixed. And you feel guilty because you feel all your problems should be fixed now. That worship time should have fixed everything. But I still feel really annoyed or angry or anxious or all this kind of stuff. But the church can be a source of critical friends to journey with you. And you need people who are going to tell you when you're being self-indulgent with your pain, which we all can be, or when they're going to just be compassionate and listen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I've been on the other side of this as a minister of a church, and, you know, I want to organize that healing service. You come forward, have a quick prayer with the prayer team, and you'll be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, and then I won't need to do lots of pastoral visits.
Yes, you know, yes.
Whatever subconscious motivation is going on there. I'm not decrying healing services in any way. I'm just saying that the process is always much smaller. I think one of the things the church can do is always just have that space to hold people, you know, when they're going through mid-faith crisis, when they're going through grief, when they're going through the trauma of looking after parents with dementia, and, you know, aren't able to give as much to the church as they used to be able to, either financially or in terms of time. I think it's just that awareness, like you say, of the time it takes to recalibrate through these kind of life experiences and dealing with grief and loss and pain. I just don't see Jesus as promising a quick fix to our problems. I certainly used to think that's how it worked, but living life makes you realise that isn't how it works. What are the practical tips would you give people?
Well, I mean, I think prayer is you know, to find a way of praying that works for you.
Yeah.
I find journaling very helpful in terms of at least identifying where you are going into repetitive modes of unhelpful thought, and dwelling on it, you know, I personally find quiet and retreats pretty helpful for that work, because it's about the work. My late friend Steve, who was a psychiatrist, always used to talk about it, people doing the work, you know, one of the reasons he would take on clients, well, are they prepared to actually do the work? Because it is hard work to transform yourself, actually.
Yeah.
And as you say, you inch forward on it. Mm. It's not quick.
And on the prayer thing, you know, you saying to people, pray.
Mm.
I want to say to people, that will involve changing your mind about what prayer is. So, for example, I can remember a time in my life I couldn't pray at all. And I didn't want to. But someone bought for me a holding cross. You know, these little handheld little crosses. And I would walk along the beach just gripping it. And of course, you know, you realise, that was my prayer. That was my prayer. So
I think that's important, actually. I think we need to create rituals. I'm thinking a lot about this, and maybe I'll talk about this next episode or in the future. I think rituals can be really important in helping us to break cycles of bad thought or to give physical shape to a process that is spiritual and psychological. You know, that's what they do. They change our emotional state through some kind of physical repetitive action. And so I think these kinds of things can be really useful, and they can help us in breaking out of it. Because I think one of the things that can happen to all of us is we get defined.
Mm.
We sort of define ourselves by our emotions and our experiences.
Mm.
We think that's what we are.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Very sort of basic level. You lose a partner. I am a widow now.
Mm.
That's who I am. I'm defined by that. You know, or I'm an anxious person. This is what I am. I'm a worrier.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need to refuse to be defined by those labels, and to find a way to break out of that is part, you know, habits and rituals can, you know, simple prayers that we learn, phrases can really help us.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, as you were talking earlier, healing is never one thing, is it? That's the thing. I think of the people who were healed in the Gospels, that woman who was healed of the bleeding, for example, for 12 years, there's a physical healing that's there, but there must have been all kinds of psychological scars.
Yes.
About who she was.
Yeah.
And how people viewed her. And there's a big healing that needs to go on in that thing. And that's why, I mean, I'm all for healing services, but maybe we need to sort of think about them as an ongoing process.
Yes.
You know, sure. They're not this sort of one-off miracle cure.
I agree. And you've just reminded me, actually, of another ritual. Same time I was using the holding cross. I was quite depressed at this time. It was that moment in my life when I went through a kind of depressed stage. And I used to like sitting in a dark room and lighting a candle.
Yeah.
And there's something about I wanted the outer environment to be as dark as I felt my inner environment was, but there was a light. There was still a light. Now, you might think the cure for darkness is you know, to go out in the bright sunshine, but actually I sort of quite like the very dark environment. I could relate to it, I suppose. But having that light was just somehow, I guess, looking back, a reminder of the Christ light that is still burning. So, you know, those times when you can't pray, I think what I'm trying to say is you can still find ways of prayer. You might not have called it prayer before, but this is prayer. This ritual is a prayer. Mm. And sometimes you just don't have words. And praying without words is great.
Great. I mean, I think also sort of listen to yourself and be honest with yourself about where you are. But also, you know, celebrate movement, celebrate change. Again, coming back to what you were saying earlier, these little moments where we think, you know what? Because I had one earlier this last week. I had I was very anxious, but I wasn't as anxious as I have been.
Yes.
And so I could beat myself up if I wanted and go, oh, so I'm still anxious about these things and I don't need. Or I could say, well, okay, that was there, but it wasn't as bad as it has been.
It's a step forward.
There's a bit of movement.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Great stuff and great advice. Well, what do you think? I think that's probably enough, isn't it?
I think that's more than enough. Thank you to everyone who listens.
Yes.
Thank you to those who recommend the podcast, pass it on to others. That's a lovely thing you do. Well, I say lovely. I think it's lovely. They might differ. Thank you to those who support us, as we said at the beginning. So grateful for that. That's great. And we will be back with you
in a
couple of weeks' time. Yeah. So if you've got things you want to say, send them to
joe@midfaithcrisis.org. Love to hear from you. I think the emails have been sorted now, so you should get, you know, replies, and I should get your emails. So I think that's all working all right now. But you've got a summer holiday to go on.
I have.
And hopefully our listeners have. So I've got a little blessing for summer holidays.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah. Don't worry about me not going on a summer holiday, by the way.
Because
I've had mine.
you've barely been away this year.
Here's a blessing for you all. May this summer bring you rest for your body, peace for your mind, and joy for your spirit. May the sun warm your days, or the rain refresh you, and gentle evenings bring you calm. May laughter be frequent, happy memories be made, and may you return refreshed and renewed.